Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Emerson from Kuan Yin Healing, and I'm talking today to Christine Clifton. Christine works with soul-powered entrepreneurs to help them shift the BS and to embrace the possibilities of their own power. She's the author of Your Spirit at Work and You Don't Have to Shout to Stand Out. She's a dynamic public speaker and believes in the power of human connection. And today, she's going to talk about energy and motion, using your emotional body to navigate your path. I'm excited. So, Christine, are you with us?
I am. Thank you so much.
Oh, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. So, wow, I'm all ears. This sounds like a fascinating topic.
Well, you know, there's some... A little history I'll give you, which is I used to own a wellness studio called Healthy Motion, and it was health-e-motion.
Uh-huh.
And so I have a special affinity to the emotion or energy in motion topic. And this event that you're pulling together to bring forth our approaches to working with feeling and loving on our emotions is aligned with that position that I have. And sometimes we're cultured to believe that emotions are good or bad. And the perhaps perspective shift that I like to have about emotion is just acknowledging that it's energy in motion. And the only way out is through. I think that's a cliche term, perhaps, if you've heard it before, but it's true. I was just talking with a client about using the concept of Aikido, which is a martial art mm-hmm. that really kind of redirects energy. And that is similar to me to say, okay, it's going to happen. How are we going to move through? And so that's keeps us a little bit from spiritual bypass that can happen and say, oh, anger is bad. I shouldn't feel angry. And instead helps us love on the experience so that it can move through.
Mm.
That's my foundational statement. I don't know.
It's funny. You're the third person I've talked to in this series to bring up Aikido. We have a theme.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
Oh, wow. A couple of things come to mind about moving through these things. One of the things that I have noticed in working with people is that when we have a physical challenge, so, you know, breaking an arm, we understand, okay, this hurts, this is unfortunate, well, we may say a few choice words, but we go to the ER, we get an x-ray, we get it set, we have a cast, we go to physical therapy, it gets better, we know this. But when we have an emotional challenge, rather than a physical challenge, we can tend to really cling to that. You know, like this is going to be this way forever. We don't go for 10 years going, yeah, I broke my arm. Says, your arm's better, dude. It's been better for years. But we do that with emotions. We have this sense, and I think we come by it innocently, but we have this sense that I'm going to be sad forever. I'm going to be upset forever. I'm going to be angry forever. Can you believe these people? And we see no way out. How do we start to shift that perspective?
Yeah. Oh, what a beautiful analogy to compare that. And what came to mind, I will answer your question. What came to mind first, though, was I saw in my mind's eye the x-ray of a healed bone. And there's always evidence of it having happened, you know, and we've moved through it. So it's always there. It's part of our... One of the things I say is life is a big old compost pile. And it just fertilizes what's to come next. So to acknowledge that these emotions are part of that formation of the future and how it informs us, how we choose to chuck and jive or be agile with it or hang on to it or not, it all informs our experience on the path. So yeah, so how do we look at those experiences that we're having that bring up these emotions and know that it's going to heal, I guess, for lack of a better term. My favorite thing to do is to speak from personal practice. And mm-hmm. my personal practice is to, well, let me shift it back even further. My personal belief system is that we are particles of the divine walking this planet. And the divine has a desire to experience itself through us. Mm-hmm. And when I remember that these experiences or emotions is part of the divine experiencing itself, it helps me be less attached to them
yeah.
as my own or something I've caused or I've done wrong or I'm responsible for that other person's reaction.
Yeah.
It helps my strength of presence and knowing that it's an experience. The highs and the lows, if we want to label them that way, are all part of that experience in the compost pile that will inform the next step, the next decision, the next relationship, the next client, the next business. So
it's really interesting.
Yeah, that's how I would.
Yeah, Spencer Johnson mm-hmm. has an interesting book called Peaks and Valleys. It speaks to me because I hike in the mountains so much. But he points out that as part of his analogy that to get to that highest summit, it isn't a straight line. You have some summits, but then you have to hike back down into a valley, a hike up, and then you hike down into another valley before you hike up. And that's all part of that experience of reaching the summit.
I love that. Yeah, and so it comes down to perspective, right? It's the perspective that we're taking it at any point. So if we are only looking myopically at walking back down into a valley and we perceive that we're heading down, it's a limited view of the whole picture. Right. If you scale back the camera or widen that lens and see that, oh, this is part of the path to get to where I'm headed, then it's a different perspective and we can take a different approach in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. There's that old saying that, you know, in inclement weather, fishermen mend their nets. And in some ways, it's making good use of downtown. But, you know, I would like to take that further, which is that if they didn't have those downtimes, they'd be out to sea with nets and their holes in them. They'd still have to take some time to take their nets on good days.
Absolutely. and it's funny, this theme, what you just brought up, has happened. This is now the fourth reference of something similar in the past week for me, and I'm experiencing this in my life right now, is a bit of an idling period, or what feels like an idling period. And even the word idle can bring up judgment, self-judgment. Oh, I'm idling. I'm not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not off. My car isn't off. I'm idling, like the engine's going. Now, I happen to float more in the naturalistic world, and so I came upon this term about 6 months ago that I really resonate with, which is interphase.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the phases of cellular regeneration, this is a scientific term. They used to call it the resting phase of the cell, but as our ability to study cell activity got better, we saw that it was not in fact resting. It was shoring up the energy and the resources it needs for the next phase of growth. So it's seemingly resting, but it is quite busy. One of my clients is a parent. I said, it's kind of like when your child, just before the growth spurt, like ate you out of house and home. It needed all that fuel for, you know, their bodies needed that fuel. So, yeah, so this pause state in my past, I have, one of my sayings is action for action's sake is distraction.
Say that again.
Action for action's sake is distraction.
Yeah.
And in my past, having been cultured in a family of origin that my mother, everything was solved by doing something about it, you know, I would just, if I hit this idle stage or this interphase, I would just launch right into action because, right, doesn't that fix everything?
Right, right.
And I've often looked back and said, oh, I regret now. I mean, not like I'm writhing on the floor regretting, but I look back and I'm like, whoa, I could have really enjoyed. It's almost like this nurturing phase or this nourishing phase that we can step into. So yeah, I really resonate with what you, that now I'm going to add yours to my pile of examples of the, when it rains, I'm repairing my net.
Well,
it's perfect.
I have another one to share and I want to pull some of this together and ask you about this. So, you know, for example, here in New York State, we have many popular varieties of apples. And I learned a few years ago that our cold winters, you know, when nothing is happening and apples can't grow, actually those cold winters are important for the growth of the apples. That when we have a warm winter, that can be very bad for the apple crop in the next spring. That they actually depend on those cold resting points. So that was just fascinating to me. My experience, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you go ahead. Yeah,
all right. Yeah, my I had a mentor when I was all about action. You know, I'm going to do something. I'm going to fix this. I'm going to, and I like, so what am I going to do? He says, why do you have to do anything? I said, no, you don't understand. I have to go. He says, well, why don't we just wait and see? And so many of the things I wanted to rush in and do something about worked themselves out without me doing anything. And after a while, I started to realize that I wasn't rushing and solving problems. Mainly, I was stirring things up a lot and not solving anything. My personal experience with anger was in my 20s. I was a very angry young man for whatever reasons. I had an interesting path out of it because I noticed, I mean, I was a professional musician and you know, had to take other jobs as many of us do. And trying to do that at those times, especially being young and not knowing half of what I thought I knew about the world. there was a pattern that came up, which was that I would, you know, I would get a job and it would look good. And the people were cool, and the manager was cool, and the job was okay. And then they would turn, and the manager would become unreasonable, and the people would become difficult to work with, and the public that went there would become unreasonable. And so I couldn't take anymore, and I would take a new job. And it would sound really, really great. And I would get there, and it starts off great, but the same things. The people, you know, the manager gets unreasonable, my coworkers, I can't work with them, the public is unreasonable, and I would take a new job. And I think I went through 6-8 of these before it finally dawned on me that, you know, I was frustrated. Why does this keep happening? Why can't I just find one good situation? And it dawned on me, you know, I don't get it, but it must be me.
Mm-hmm. I love the phrase, you know, wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah. And the connection to anger there was, being a professional wind musician at the time, while I'm soft spoken, I can make quite a noise, well founded and for a while. And I had more than once left a room of people shaking, and just because it was so unexpected, and I learned slowly that it didn't happen all the time, but But if you only get angry once every year or two, that's enough because everybody is wondering, yeah, sure, he's fine now, but when's the next time? And it gradually occurred to me, because I was still plenty self-righteous, but it occurred to me where I'm going with all this is that this isn't working. This is not serving me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to change. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And what does that look like? And how do I do that? And, yes.
And much later, I read what John Gray writes about this in one of his many treatises on the subject, that anger is a shield for sadness and fear and anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah, I often, up until, I would say about 6-ish years ago, I didn't have a relationship with anger. I honestly, until I worked with this one coach who helped me with it, I couldn't remember a time when I got angry. And when I think about my upbringing, I call myself a social introvert, but I am more introverted. I go within for my energy replenishment. I also grew up in a military family, and I was an introvert, and I had all brothers, so I was a bit in the minority, and whatever else informed my choices to go silent. You know, we were to be seen and not heard, and so I remember one outburst of anger as a little girl where I wore my Easter shoes to school and I wasn't supposed to, and I lost the bow on it and I got in trouble. And when I got sent to my room, I threw my shoe across the room against the wall. Like, that's the only anger. And I got in trouble for that too, by the way. So yeah, I mean, relationships with anger is really interesting. And it really is, I find for me when I look back now that it really was rooted in fear for me. My experience is that fear is one of the biggest culprits. And I don't resonate when I see people saying that, well, when you're angry, you're wrong, or you're lashing out at me when you're angry, you know, angry. I don't think anger is, I don't think any emotion is wrong. To circle back to how we started the conversation, because it's an experience. So in your case, the story is you recognize it after whatever period of time. I call that the life spiral, by the way. So I don't believe that we have patterns per se, and some people do a lot of self-judgment when they recognize a pattern. I'm using air quotes around pattern. Mm-hmm. It's instead, you can't ever go back. You've already had the experience from the first time around. So your spiral experience just takes you a little more deep and deep until you see it or address it or evolve through it. And that's your story, is that, oh, it's here. Oh, what's the common denominator? Right. Me, raising hands, me. Right. So it's beautiful if we can, again, these are all mindset and perspective shifts we're talking about here, to say, oh, okay, and now how do I do this? What resources can I gain? What skills can I learn? How can I honor myself and the people around me and my choices as I navigate this, in my case, new relationship with anger? I mean, my coach at the time, I was essentially broke. I was on the back end of Superstorm Sandy here in New Jersey. Was devastating. I went 3 months with zero business income because of the storm. And I truly was eating things out of my freezer that I couldn't identify when frozen. Mm-hmm. They had been in there so long. And so I was in a tough way. And he taught me this skill about screaming into a towel. Mm-hmm. It's not a sexy name, but it's what he guided me through. And right. Oh my gosh, it was a transformative opportunity for me to release that energy. Right. Yeah. So the name that I offered to you for this chat today is energy in motion. So anger is energy in motion. It's emotion. So how can I get it in motion? And it was stuck, let me tell you. Big nice. Time stuck. And I am forever grateful for learning that skill, that tool.
That's interesting, because one of the things I did was I had I managed a New Age bookstore toward the end of that period, and things didn't always go smoothly, and we also did a big futon business, and I would go back into the storeroom, and I'm not really a demonstrative person in this way generally, but I would go out and punch the living bejesus out of a futon for 10 minutes, and I'd come back, or be like, "You okay?" I'd say, "I feel fine." And I wondered about that, but you're giving me a language for this. It says what I actually did instead of hanging on to that was I put it into motion.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, all ways work. One of my mentors says that. And so we get to choose the way that is aligned with us. And when you shared that example, the one thing I thought of is, well, so now the futons are super comfortable for those who buy them. Because they've beaten the stiffness out of them. But I also think of my days in I used to be in restaurants, which can be a very stressful job. And on the days that I needed to just scream out frustration or whatever, I didn't identify it as anger at the time, but I walked into the walk-in cooler in the restaurant. You know, restaurants have those walk-in coolers, refrigerators. So mm-hmm. I walk in, shut the door. It's nice and cool in there. It's completely insulated. And I would just let out a big old scream just to relieve the tension and the stress of the day.
Wow, nice. Yeah, because I was wondering, because when we started talking about anger, I mean, in anger is primarily a reactive emotion. Nobody gets up in the day and says, "What should I do today? I think I'll get angry around noon." You know, it's not something we do proactively. It's very much a reaction to things that have happened, But today we're talking about using your emotional body to navigate your path, and every single one of these is proactive. What is my path? How do I navigate? How do I use my emotional body? And so the bridge that you're building for us is that step one would be to, first of all, maybe similar to that broken arm thing, instead of clinging to it, let's get it in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree? Is that
mm-hmm.
yeah?
Yeah, and actually, I'd enhance that. I might move that to slot two.
Okay.
My slot one would be acknowledging that it's there.
Okay.
Because and it's not just acknowledging. I learned a skill set. I went on a retreat two springs ago with Matt Licata and Jeff Foster. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them.
No, I'm not.
They, their work is really powerful. And it's similar in that they really, the name of the retreat was Falling in Love with Where You Are. Mm-hmm. And the skill that I learned at that retreat was welcoming the emotion like you would welcome a lost child at your door into your home. And just say, "Come in, here you are." So it's a little more than acknowledging it. It's really embracing that it's happening. And then step two would be to keep it in motion. It's to move it into motion. Yeah.
Very interesting.
I'm not sure what step three would be, but yeah, we can keep chatting through it. We're like crystallizing things in the moment, you know,
right.
And that little pause right then was so delicious because I'm just envisioning in my mind's eye, isn't this beautiful that we can create some tools specifically for folks who are listening? And
it's fun to do that. I was once on the phone with Tad Hargrave of Marketing for Hippies, and he had once, he had once had, the 10 mistakes that most holistic practitioners make. And I thought, let's get on the phone and record an interview for that, for the holistic chamber. So he said, "Sure, I'd be glad to do that." And we got there. Neither of us could remember it or find it. So we recreated it.
Oh gosh.
But you know,
it shows the power of your intention and and the embodiment of your work, right? That's really it. So, anyway, you know, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Number three for me is I'm not sure. Maybe you can help us. How others might find a path to this. So, you know, part of my story and part of making those turnarounds is the, you know, I drowned myself in alcohol for 10 years. And when I come out of that, when I'm in these experiences now, when things come up, you know, two things happen for me. One is they don't happen for very long. I can't say I don't get angry, but I don't, it's a flash. And then I step back and go, what's actually going on here? But the other is that having lived through a long portion of my life where I had pretty much separated myself from the ability to feel, that when things feel bad, I truly appreciate the ability to feel, including including bad feelings, in a very real sense. I mean, there's a time where, for example, if my stomach hurt, I didn't know if I was hungry, if I was ill, if I'd injured myself, or if I'd just, you know, there was just too much alcohol in my system, or if I was, I didn't know. So today I do know. Because, wow, that hurts.
Go figure. Yeah, you know, one of the things Matt Licata talks about with this topic is that as children, we tend to unconsciously associate feeling bad with being bad. So, yeah, so that, you know, that is an opportunity for a shift as well, is to say, you know, hey, it doesn't make me a bad person because I'm feeling bad. It just means I am experiencing it. And I wonder whether your own spiral, okay, path through your relationship with feeling again is that now you are at a point in that spiral or your path where you recognize it's happening, and the pace at which you move it through is much quicker today, perhaps, than in the past. It's like, oh, I'm angry. Oh, why am I angry? I'm afraid of, you know, Janie leaving me. Oh, okay. Is Janie leaving me? No. Okay. Bye-bye.
Right.
And it's just like, whoosh, you know, like a breath of wind these days. But, and that's about, you know, I love calling my own path a practice, whether it be my life or my work, my spiritual practice, my work is a practice because I'm practicing.
Right.
and only through practice can we learn to do what you've just described is, you know, is your place on the path right now. And everyone's at different places. It doesn't make us, it's not hierarchical. It's simply, you know, I tell my clients, you know, you're going to leapfrog me one day and I'm going to be learning from you. I mean, it's just we're all on our own, in our own way. Right. So it's
well, music performance is a good analogy for this. You know,
how
do I learn to play something like this so effortlessly? Oh, it's easy. Just spend 10 years in a practice room playing scales for 8 hours a day, and you too can do this effortlessly. You know, or the. The businesses that are overnight successes, and if you take a look, you know, that overnight success was 10 years in the making.
Yeah, someone told me there's an actual term for that, and I forget what it was, but it's true. There is no instantaneousness, you know. And again, I look back to that statement I made earlier about the compost pile, because our experiences as we fertilize the future with what we're experiencing now just informs us. It may not be in full. It may just be one facet of that we draw through to the next place, but it's an evolution. That's what I like to think of it as, is we're just unfolding. And these abilities that we gain, awarenesses and perspective shifts that we apply, is an embracing of the unfolding of the evolution. you know, it's not doing, it is truly being. And the being is that unfolding, which is enabling the evolution to continue. One of the things I say is that, I say a lot of things as you gathered up till now, but, you know, people are like, why am I resisting this thing outside of me, you know, or whatever? Why am I resisting this? I said, you're not resisting that. You're resisting your own evolution. And that's different. You're interrupting your evolution. That's why you're feeling resistance. It's not that you don't want to do your first public speaking talk because you're afraid of it. It's that you're feeling called and drawn to do this thing, and you're resisting your evolution to do this thing.
It's interesting too. So it's sometimes a little different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we sometimes talk to people about, let's find the real problem here. You know, why are you really stuck? What's really going on? Raymond Aron talks of, gives the example of, you know, you don't have problems exercising. You have problems getting started exercising. Once you get started, you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, and he uses the example. So the problem isn't, you know, how do I exercise more? No, the problem is, how do you get started? He goes, here's the solution. You know, when you wake up in the morning, does your wife lean over, give you a good kiss, say good morning, sweetheart? He goes, yeah, something like that. He goes, well, tomorrow she's going to lean over, give you a kiss, and say, give me 20. And it sounds so funny, but it's like, that's all it takes to start the exercise routine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, really finding...
That's fantastic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What's the real resistance? And then, again, you know, once started, I know as a musician doing scales is the same way. Playing scales all morning isn't a real chore. The real chore is getting started.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Right?
And
once I'm at the gym,
go ahead.
I said, once I'm at the mm-hmm. gym, I exercise. What I have to do is get myself to the gym.
Yes. I love that so much. Yeah, I've made a note of that. And what I find is, as I mentioned, I'm a social introvert, and many of my clients are more on the quiet side as well. And there seems to be a theme or tendency about, they're more hesitant to get started. They would prefer to have a blueprint, or in my business, I call it a bit of architecture, so they can see like the blueprint of the house building, you know, so they can go, oh yeah, okay, that's what the architecture is. My extroverted clients tend to be already in motion and all over the stinking place. I say they commit spastic marketing, you know, because they're just running around doing everything. And I have to kind of tap them into the roadmap that makes sense for them. So it's a little bit different, but the getting started piece is really poignant, I think, that you just shared, because some people don't, it's not that they're necessarily resisting getting started, it's that they don't understand the framework or the architecture and how it fits into the bigger picture, perhaps.
Yeah.
It's just that, and it's because they haven't practiced yet. I haven't practiced getting up for the gym. I don't know what that's going to be like. So we have this idea or perceived outcome or perceived experience that hasn't even been had yet, which is what's stopping us. And so when you can change the perception, then it can change the stuckness.
That is so funny. I vividly remember somebody years ago telling me, Tim, stop having conversations with people who aren't even there. That's just insane.
Well, introverts have a lively inner world, you know, and I'll say you've already finished the conversation and you haven't even had it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get caught up in all the what ifs, and the fact is, we don't even know what the person
right.
might respond, you know?
So, one of the things
so
that
knowing
really
the architecture of the conversation, which is something I teach as well, helps people say, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. And again, the agility theme is coming back now. Aikido, agility, is that, okay, if I know the framework and I can be agile, then it, you know, what am I afraid of in terms of this conversation, or what am I afraid of in terms of starting this action?
Right.
It's really gaining that agility skill set.
And if I'm going to make up all
key.
their And if I'm going to make up all their answers, what's the point of having the conversation?
Exactly. And you know, your musical experience is a perfect analogy as well. So when I was told I was going to take piano lessons as a little girl, I didn't want to learn the skills. I wanted to learn songs, you know. And how limiting is that? That if I learn the song only, then I'm only learning that song.
Right.
But the architecture, the framework of music is practicing the scales, number one, understanding music theory, number two. And the quote I'll use for this one is that the paradox of discipline is that it enables creativity. So that discipline or architecture framework is what then enables you to choose to write a song if you want,
right,
or be able to enhance a musical score,
right,
with your own, you know, nuances.
Yeah, that's very true. If you go backstage at a, you know, at a symphony performance, there's, you know, the regulars, and there'll be maybe a few extras for if they're doing a large performance, and you can tell who they are immediately. The talented amateurs from the professionals, because the talented amateurs are practicing all the flashy excerpts. The professionals are playing. The professionals are playing long, slow scales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Right. So I have a question to help listeners who may not be familiar with this. So, what is our emotional body, and how do we use it? And for that matter, how do we know what our path is and that we're navigating it? How do we know we're unfolding and not just kind of, you know, oozing?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, the way that I move through is the foundational pieces for me include understanding my calling and having a relationship with my calling, because I believe my calling also unfolds and reveals itself over time in a deeper way, in increments. And for me, that is my divining rod, is my calling. In our physical world, much of our culture is action, action, we want action. You know, it's all about the doing. And so for me to really listen to my emotional body to navigate my path, it's to really hone what we've talked about. And it's almost like I have three orbs running through my being at any one time. One orb is my spiritual belief system. So I said that earlier, that I happen to believe we're particles of the divine walking this planet, and that we're here to experience, so the divine can experience itself. So for me, that is a belief system that's connected to that spiritual belief, and also the honoring of the emotion or what happens to us, you know, in that way. Then I have metaphysical orb that I have floating through. And for me, that's a big part of my belief system around metaphysics and how it works. So when I vibrate at the resonance of my calling, then my belief system is that in metaphysics, I'm going to be drawing aligned opportunities, people, resources, and opportunities to me in my life and my business. And then the third orb that floats around for me at any given time is that physical being orb. So it's my vessel. And the vessel, for me, gives me kinesthetic signals as to right decisions or right, you know, choices based on my calling and the spiritual belief system as well. So using it to navigate my path is really using my body, mind, and spirit as a divining rod, as a interconnected network of, or a system that moves me through the world. And when I can be connected to those things, and again, in my case, I tend to also be a kinesthetic intuitive when I go through life. So I, you know, if I'm shopping for an apartment, I like to be there to make the decision. I'm just a little more kinesthetic that way.
Mm-hmm.
But your body can signal us. And it also, I think, can also show us, in some cases, disease shows us things in our physical bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So the emotional body for me is part of those three orbs, and when I can connect to them and really honor them for the role they play in that system within me, then I can better tap into my intuitive self and make those decisions that are best aligned for me. And so your body is wise. Where, you know, when I was a little girl, I was told that I was oversensitive, I was hypersensitive, that I needed to get thicker skin. Now, again, I told you my background, military family, only girl in a family full of boys, you know, so, and I would burst out crying. I wouldn't even know why. And my parents were like, why are you crying? Why are you crying? And I didn't have the consciousness around it at the time. Now I burst out crying and I know that there is a belief system getting busted, or there is something that my body is telling me about this interaction. And sometimes I can't even label it. And that's okay today that I can't label it. I just know that it was an emotional release that needed to happen for whatever reason.
Right.
So that's really, you know, that's how I'd initially respond to that question.
I love this idea of motion. You know, you know, I sometimes that when those emotions come up and we don't know where they're from, it's like there are a couple questions. One, does this emotion even really belong to me? Am I picking something up? But even if it does, you know, to keep it in motion, to let it move through. You know, if you know, if your house filled with smoke, you wouldn't shut all the windows to keep it in. You know, it's like, let's let the smoke keep on moving. And the same thing with emotions. I remember vividly one difficult emotional time I was going through, and a friend of mine told me, which I later learned out as I think a quote from Churchill, if you're going through hell, for God's sakes, don't slow down.
Love that one too. It is motion, and I think, and everyone's different. I have a background of being a woman in motion. I used to play individual sports as a girl, and I've done and taught swing dancing and mind body fitness called Nia. I used to do and teach Nia. So I am a gal in motion. And there's also now, you know, our science is so much greater that we can actually see that motion is so important to our physical body, but it's also showing the research that the emotion, it helps the emotional body as well, because that's where the energy sits. You know, that's where the vibration sits. And everything's energy. And so it's all moving. And if we don't, that's when that dis-ease or the resistance feeling, you know, starts to show itself.
So as far as navigating our path or finding our path, then it's something we largely feel. We talk about feeling your way, and you say, take that seriously.
And it's I'll say this too. I think it's in my DNA. I'm all about harmony and harmonizing. And so I'll talk a lot about the practical and the intuitive. You know, there's the polarity I'm using in my hands right now, just making an infinity symbol in the air, because I feel that's how the motion shows up. So yeah, so the feeling, so it's feelings and practical. It's both. And so it's important. I think that we get cultured into the tangible so strongly that it's sometimes the feeling or the emotional that we haven't developed. It isn't a muscle that we have developed. And until I became a Nia instructor and went through the training, I realized at the time of Nia, where they were teaching us words for emotions, that those words were not even in my vocabulary. As a 40-something grown woman, I just hadn't been raised with that emotional quotient or emotional intelligence around it. And so I was amazed that this was out there, and that now, even today, sometimes I struggle finding the right emotion word to describe what I'm feeling, and now I have it. So it's a muscle, it's an education also that you can bring in to harmonize that, you know, tangible with the intangible, or the feelings with the practical. You know, it's both and.
And just briefly, for people who don't know, can you explain what Niyeh is for them?
Oh, it would be my joy. Definitely go on the interwebs and use the Google to find it. But Niyeh is a mind-body movement practice that integrates martial arts, healing arts, and dance arts. So imagine movement-filled yoga with barefoot to music. And my best description of it is you walk in not knowing what to expect, and you walk out laughing and sweating. So it's non-impact. It's about getting your body, mind, emotions, and spirit in motion. And it's beautifully in alignment with how the body naturally moves. So, you know, you're not using steps or sneakers or weights. You're using your body.
Right.
So it's lovely. Try it if you haven't.
Thank you. I also, you know, your emphasis on the practical, like you said, often we become very physical and we forget the feeling, but also I think we can get very into the feeling and forget to do the practical things. I often compare this kind of approach to trying to lift a heavy board from one end, which doesn't work. And so we run around and try to lift it from the other end, which doesn't work. There was a saying in a novel here I saw years and years ago, I think it's in a lot of places, but it said, you know, it doesn't hurt to put yourself in the path of the gods, and to take the kind of steps and move things forward. I wanted to ask you, because this is so much a part of our language, we hear this a lot, we talk about, because I help people through pain, I'm often talking to medical practitioners who understand this as the mind-body connection. We often talk about the mind-body-spirit connection. Very rarely do we hear about the mind-body-spirit emotional connection. Emotion kind of gets, you know, cast aside. I have a friend who's worked with introverts and empaths. And every time I ask for her feedback on something, she always says, it needs more emotion. And I've come to be to pay attention to that. But do you think that's accurate? Does the emotion kind of get short shrift here?
Yeah, you know, I think that depending on who you talk to, you know, that they would say, you know, your spirit is your essence, or who you really are, you know, kind of thing. So some people would say the emotion is in there somewhere. I was first introduced to mind, body, emotion, spirit through Niyeh. That is part of their tagline and their practice. So when I was introduced to that, I was like, ooh, you know, yeah, it is emotion. And there's some people say, well, it's all in your head. So they say emotion is covered under, under the mind part of that triad. So I do think, you know, everything's so subjective. I mean, I've met people who were raised in emotionally high emotional quotient families, and they're more attuned to that than others. But I do think culturally it gets overlooked or judged, or, you know, oh, I don't know what to do when somebody else is feeling emotion. And that's not about the person having the emotion. It has to do with the person witnessing the emotion. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a skill set that, you know, doesn't get trained in some households because you weren't raised with that level of awareness. So, yeah, I do think it gets a little left behind or lost. I know it was that way for me. And my parents are lovely. They did the very best they can with what they knew and at the time. And so it's been a beautiful part of my late, you know, midlife, I might even say, path to become more aware and embrace it into my psyche. So yeah, I think it does get lost, and it gets misinterpreted and or misperceived as good or bad. And it isn't either. It just is. And so that's a huge learning curve for some, a small learning curve for others. And at the time that, you know, we're recording this, there's a lot of things happening in the United States right now that is causing emotions to rise.
Man.
And I think we're seeing the lack of skill set that many people have, at least that are in the news, to manage it and to embrace it, to name it, to, you know, I love Brene Brown and how she's brought vulnerability and shame into the mainstream conversation. So this is a similar thing that we have that opportunity to say, how do we manage it? And I don't, you say manage, and that's not the right word, but how can we name it and learn to be with it? Because it's natural. And by doing so and gaining some skills around it, we can so help ourselves and others make it a part of their skill set as well. It, beautiful ripple effect that could happen.
You in several places have brought up this dichotomy between doing and being. It's I first really encountered that consciously. Ryan Eliason was stressing this, is that we want to set out what are the things I need to do. But more important than that is before you can change what you're doing and get good results, you have to change how you're being, how you're showing up in the world. That otherwise, what you do will just revert back to. So the example I give is like, you know, if you're taking a class and you're not a good student because you have various habits and you don't like to study or read or something like that, you can say, oh, I'm going to work harder and do my work. But if you don't change that essential, you know, who you're being, who you show up as in the world, that resolve is going to last a week or two, and you're going to be back to where you were. So I was just wondering your thoughts on that.
You know, I have this perspective that is, you know, when you're facing something that you don't want to do or you're procrastinating, many of us will dive straight into self-judgment around that. And all I say is, well, you're out of alignment with it. That's all. Our body knows. And alignment for me is, are you vibrating at that place of calling first? Because if you aren't, then you're going to force yourself into action for action's sake, which is what I said earlier. Instead, I want to vibrate along with my calling so that I can be in alignment first, so that when the opportunity, people, and choices are in front of me, I'm choosing that which is in most alignment with me. So the doing, you know, I work with business owners and they're like, I want to write a business plan. Well, why do you want to write a business plan?
Right.
Because John says I need it. Well, why do you think you need it? And and so as I peel back those layers to say, what is it really? It's often in that one example, well, just people have said I need, but do you need it? Do you need it? So ask, you know, come back to that resonance of self so you can make that best decision for you. I had a client session this morning and he had this beautiful spreadsheet of all the opportunities that were in front of him. And I said, well, the first thing we're going to do is code them green, yellow, or red. And he's like, what? And I said, well, we're going to hone in on your vision. We're going to let you vibrate a few seconds around your vision, mission, you know, values. Mm-hmm. And now look at this list of 20 people. And how many of them are really green right now, you know? And he was like, oh, like his whole body took a deep breath and relaxed because we could do all those 20 phone calls, but what's really resonating, because our body knows and it will tell us what the next best step is. And yet the red ones don't mean forever that they're no, it just means no for now.
You know, it's interesting. I have a similar way. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You know, it's not my main focus, but I work with some folks who to help them get their own holistic businesses going in a sustainable way. And often like you say, there's this emphasis on doing, I should do this, 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 and I'll share, okay, well, those are tactics. And before we talk about tactics, we should talk about what the strategy is. And we can't have a strategy until we know what it is we're trying to achieve. The power of that. And then it clarifies so many of these things. So for example, I said, well, the first thing, if you're feeling overwhelmed, the first thing you're going to do is start a not doing now list. It's an awesome idea, but I'm not doing it now.
I love that.
And then the second thing is like, let's talk about your why. And I'm thinking of a client I'm working with now. When I asked her that, she said, "Oh, that's easy," and she spent 5 minutes telling me all about her why, and it was beautiful. She said, "So what's the next step?" And I said, "The next thing you do is tell it to your staff." And so she told it to her people, next call, so how are things going? She said, "Well, I had a staff meeting, and I told them my why." I said, "How'd it go?" She says, "Beautiful. They cried." I said, "Perfect." Next, ask them their why, and then. Let's get that all up in pictures on the wall as people walk into your place. Once those things are clear, all these others, what should the things I should be doing? That's so much, it's clarifies. There's a focus on that. This is in alignment with our values, and this is in alignment with why we're here at all. And, which are the things that will help us get us there?
And so I'm going to go a little geeky on you here, but I'm over here like doing yes, 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 jumping jacks. So what you've just described, so I do similar work too around why, purpose, calling. And so you reminded me, okay, so why do we want to go to the why? Because it generates an emotion. It generates an emotion. It's a vibration. And so the emotion is the vibration that we're emoting around our purpose, cause, or belief, as Simon Sinek would say, right, in his book, Start With Why. Mm-hmm. But we start there, and it brings up an emotion. So her staff felt emotional when they heard her why. And now they're feeling more connected. So the geek in me says, now there's oxytocin flowing between that leader and her team. And oxytocin is the body's natural, generator of the feeling of connection, collaboration, and cooperation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes with my clients, I need not do more with them than remind them of their why and look at those cells on the Excel spreadsheet, and they go off like, totally focused and clear and out of the gate like nobody's business, because the resonance of their why, their vision is what's vibrating out there and pinging back what feels aligned, and that's then what they choose. So similar to you, I start with why, then I move in, once we've got their why, we move into their goals that can support the why coming into the world. Right. Mm-hmm. And then we can look at the strategy that we need to implement to reach those goals. And by having the buy-in of her team to then say, hey, team, I shared my why. What's your why? And where do you see it in my why? Mm-hmm. Where do you see you in my why? And what Simon Sinek will say, and what he said at the end of his book, Leaders Eat Last, was that the vision of an organization is what keeps the organization running, because it's never ending. And it keeps the emotion fired up and the fire stoked. And because that vision is that perpetual, he calls it he talks about the finite game versus the infinite game. So your vision is the infinite and your goals are the finite. And you need both. Mm. So, yeah, it's the oxytocin, man. I mean, that's what's happening there. And it works for ourselves and our own motivation. And it works as leaders, that we evoke it from our team, that it forms that you know, that's what makes people want to stay late to meet a deadline. That's what makes people cover for the other person because their parent died. You know, that's what it just, it goes on and on and on. Right. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
What it reminds me of was
that's good stuff.
Was it Ziegler who said, you can achieve anything you want if you help other people achieve what they want?
Yes, I think that was Zig, yep.
And I also would like to point out to people, you know, if for those people who are listening, so, well, that's great, but, you know, I don't run a business, that this is a powerful, it's the same thing as Christine just mentioned, that it's a metaphor. I'm a Taoist, and in throughout Taoist scripture is this constant metaphor of governing a country. And it doesn't, and it's not meant to be, you know, advice for political parties. It's that's a metaphor for governing your own body. The same applies here. You know, what is your personal why? What is your personal goals?
Yeah.
What's your strategy for getting there?
Exactly. Yeah, I do a talk called Ignite Your Inner Leader. And it's exactly what you and I are talking about around getting really connected to your purpose calling. Doesn't have to show up in your work. It can be your volunteerism, your family, you know, your faith. And by using that as a starting point, it's what fuels your beliefs and therefore your choices, which then takes you into action. So if you Google leadership, it's all about, you know, you have to do X and you have to do Y and you have to do Z, and it's doing. The inner leader is the being, and it's stoking that inner fire around alignment and knowing who you are and what matters to you. And I mean, there's a lot of causes that are showing themselves right now in our country, and we would wipe ourselves out to try to take them all on. So we get to go within and say, what is resonant for me? What activism do I choose? It might simply be having dinner with your family one night a week, you know?
Right. Yeah, building
that might
connection.
Be your activism, and that's perfect. So, so it's applicable to every human being, not just entrepreneurs.
Beautiful, beautiful. Man, this hour went fast.
I know, I was thinking the same thing.
We'll have to have a sequel.
Yes, let's have a sequel.
We'll have sometime in 2018 or we'll do a whole new program, Conversations with No Time Frame. And we won't stop till we're done.
It sounds delicious.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for taking time out. I'm smiling and feeling lighter from all these ideas. There's some wonderful takeaways here. To find out more about Christine and her work, you can go to christineclifton.com. That's christineclifton.com. Wow, what a what an hour.
I know, I've enjoyed it, and I'm hopeful the listeners found some value, little nuggets in here for them too.
Yes. Thank you so much again, and take care.
You're welcome.
Hey, bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, wow, what an interview.
I loved it. Just so perfect. Perfect example of flow.
Okay, wow, what an interview. Wow. So, Christine talked right away about health emotion, that are connecting our health and our emotions and getting in motion. But for her, wellness and is about a perspective. It's about that shift in emotion. You know, that while the only way out is through, that doesn't sound terribly inspiring, but in fact, it stresses this point of movement. She has this wonderful description of life as compost, that it's that, you know, that sounds yucky and smelly, but that's that fertile material, that these emotions, in fact, inform our experience. So, for example, in an anger-like emotion, you know, we move through that emotion. So she described that we are part of the divine walking, that the divine experiences through us. And this is all part of that. It's not a matter of good and bad. And that lets us be less attached to the emotional things. So we don't feel that we're wrong or that the other person reacted inappropriately or so forth. We can really take it all as experience. We talked a little bit about Spencer Johnson's Peaks and Valleys, about, you know, sometimes we have to go down to get up to the next summit. And she described this, I love this, as, you know, versus that, not that life is going down, but we're moving along that path. We talked about when the weather is bad, fishermen mend their nets. And if they didn't do that, of course, their nets would be full of holes. She says, she calls that idling. And it's a cellular phrase that she described, called interphase, that's not really a resting, but it's a shoring up of resources. It's an important part of cellular health. She compared this to a child's growth spurt when they're eating you out of house and home. She says that action for action's sake is distraction. That this is a very cultural thing for us, but it's not as really purposeful, you know, to just do something. You know, and we can end up regretting this. It's not as nourishing. We talked about the idea that sometimes, you know, anger is a cover for fear. It says, but she likes to think of it as all part of the experience, as a life spiral. She stays away from the word pattern. This is much more about spirals, and that we are, it's a releasing, it's moving that stuckness into motion. That this is the way that things work. I just, you know, I've raised the idea that anger is, you know, really a reaction to things, not a proactive thing. And so we brainstormed a few points there. And she said the first thing would be to acknowledge that an emotion like anger is there. And then the second thing is to keep it in motion, rather clinging to it. She shared that she's recently been to a retreat called Falling in Love with Where You Are, and to, you know, welcome that like you would a lost child. And so, keeping that moving along. She said the third step then would be keeping in mind that feeling bad does not equal being bad. You know, it's an experiment. It's part of this compost, an experience. It's part of that compost. It's the fertility for the next step. She made a distinction between practice and practicing. Because when she's doing her practice, I'm practicing. It's all part of life experience. And again, that compost is the fuel for our evolution, for our unfolding. Throughout, she stressed the difference between being and doing. Often the reason we have trouble doing, it's not really that thing that we're resisting. Rather, it's a resistance to our own evolution, about getting clear on the right problem. She talks about learning the architecture of a conversation, to have that agility to move through. And she compared this to, you know, learning a song versus learning the skill set that a professional musician would have to do many, many things. So how do we do this? She says, well, for her, it's about, first of all, understanding what your calling might be, because that's, for her, is the divining rod, what I might think of as the compass. And she talks about having a relationship to your calling. You know, again, that our culture goes into action, but to really focus on this being thing. She talks about, for her, she has three orbs: a spiritual belief system that honors her emotions and experience, a metaphysical orb that resonates with that vibration of her calling, and a physical being that she listens to for kinesthetic signals. You know, so she's thinking of buying an apartment. She has to go there, see how her body feels. And that this is a large part of what she means, you know, by that emotional body self, that better intuitive sense. And so, again, keeping the energy moving, that everything is energy, to avoid getting stuck and diseased or disordered, we keep that moving. So literally, you know, feeling our way is in a practical way, is the process, in a harmonious way. We talked about mind, body, spirit, and how emotion really belongs in there, though some people might include it as part of spirit or mind or so forth. But the main thing that she stressed is it's not good or bad. It just is. You know, there aren't good emotions and bad emotions. They're all part of the experience. She talked about sometimes when we're struggling, it's simply because we lack yet that skill set, whether individually or culturally. She referenced Renee Brown's work around vulnerability and shame and said that, you know, if we can name it, we can be with it. And then we can help both ourselves and with others as part of, to get conscious of that experience. She used the example of procrastination, that often when we procrastinate, we start self-judging, because really it's just that we're out of alignment with whatever is going on. And then we start taking action for action's sake without any real connection to what we're doing. We talked about finding our why, our purpose, our calling. And she says, because once you find your why am I doing this? That it generates that emotion, that vibration. She referenced Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, an excellent book, by the way. And she talked about the kind of the oxytocin among, you know, connections, whether it's a work team or any other team, that feeling of connection, collaboration that a why can bring. That why can generate our goals and generate our strategies. She also talked about Sinek's book, Leaders Eat Last. And he makes this distinction about, you know, it's those fired emotions that keep things running. So we have both the finite and the infinite goals. Our vision keeps the infinite going. The finite is our goals. As Zig Ziglar said, you know, if you can achieve anything you want if you help others achieve what they want. She has this program called Ignite Your Inner Leader. And really stressing this level of when we work from where we're being, from that part of us, then those levels help to create our choices. It will help us keep focused on what really matters and moving to, truly moving us forward, feeling that energy, that emotional body to navigate our path. It was an hour that went very, very quickly. Wonderful conversation. To learn more about Christine, you go to christineclifton.com and learn more about her work with soul-powered entrepreneurs and how she shifts them into possibilities. I'm inspired. I need to sit and give this some thought. I hope you've enjoyed it as well. I'm sure you have. And talk to you next time. Take care.